welcome to episode 120 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben 304, and we are still alive, and we're back. Hello.
Yeah, and also, I think your microphone is not set to your snowball on Skype, because you sound like you are far away. This is the magic of podcasting, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, so... We haven't podcasted in a while. Also, hello. Now you're a lot better sounding now.
Excellent.
Yes. We haven't podcasted in a while, and for that we apologize, but it's been a very busy year for both of us. It's been six months.
And roughly, yeah.
I'm tempted to make reference to a Bare Naked Ladies song, but I'm not going to.
Oh dear, man! I wonder what. No, I don't. No, I know what happened to Bare Naked Ladies. I read
they
their
put
Wikipedia
their clothes
article
on.
Last year. No, they put. I read their Wikipedia Wikipedia article last year, and I was like, "Oh, well, that's sad." But bands.
Wait, what happened to them?
I forget. They had some fallen out or something. Okay. It wasn't very interesting, but yeah.
I see. Well, good. Anyway, how have you been the past 6 months, Ben Chandler?
I've been busy, Francisco.
Me too!
Yeah.
What a surprise!
Yeah. Well, we both had a game come out.
Yeah.
That we worked on separately.
Yes.
And I had a project that I worked on successfully kickstarted.
Yes, congratulations on that to Richard
thanks.
Cobbett and all involved.
Yeah, and you had Adventure X, and I had lots of... I've been playing lots of gigs with the band, not gags.
Gags.
And yeah, and just working on other stuff, and yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just been one of those things where it's just all been happening all the time, and I just... Finally, as the year comes to a close, it's all starting to stabilize a bit.
Yes. That's always a good feeling, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have periods where you've got a lot of stuff on and you know, have a reason to get out of the house. That's nice.
Mm.
But also it's nice to... I have a weekend, this weekend, home all to myself. I don't have to go out and play guitar and sing. So that's really...
Good.
A refreshing change of pace, and I'm looking forward to it.
Indeed. I also, this weekend, don't have anything to do, which is nice, because I've been going out a lot lately. Which, I mean, is nice because I didn't really do that much in the last few months of working on Lamplight City, but so now I'm kind of catching up with all the social stuff that I didn't get to do, but...
Right. Yeah. You're a sort of, I guess, droughts and floods kind of guy lately, but that's all
yep.
right. That's how it goes.
That is how it goes.
I've been reading books because my power went out for a day and a half this week, and I was in the city last weekend and bought 5 books, and I have 30 pages left in the one that I've been reading tonight, which is The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler.
Oh, nice.
And then I have one of those books left.
How does it compare to the film version?
It has some disappointing homophobic language and attitude compared to the film version, and they actually talk about the porn racket, which they weren't allowed to talk about in the film. There's a lot less flirting. I like Raymond Chandler's writing, but he's never been openly homophobic in any of the other books that I've read of his before, so it's a shame to encounter that and be like, you know.
Yeah.
He was one of my favorite writers. His prose is magnificent, but to encounter that sort of attitude's never that great.
No, it's not.
Shame.
Yeah. It's always, yeah. Well, that kind of dips into something else. I realized we don't have a particular specific topic to talk about this episode, but I can think of... I've already thought of several things to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 6 months, and we've been working on games this entire time.
Yeah.
So.
One of the things I guess I wanted to talk about... let's start off with the dark and heavy stuff. With you talking about Raymond Chandler and his disappointing reveal... I kind of want to talk about an experience that I had at Adventure X, which kind of ties into that. So Adventure X is, as for those of you who don't know, a conference held in London.
Come on.
I mean, I know our audience, but maybe someone's never heard of Adventure X.
they're not stupid. If they've heard of us, they've heard of Adventure X. Come on.
That's true. I did have a few people at Adventure X ask me about the podcast. Oh!
I met the crocodile. Yeah, but hang on. You're literally at a conference filled with adventure game shit, and you're like, yeah. Where's the podcast? Come on, enjoy the thing you've got in front of you instead of worrying about us talking rubbish for an hour. Think of it. We're not going to give you any further quality that a convention center full of, like, however many people from all over the world are going to give you. We've got nothing to offer.
Yeah. But we've got lots to waffle about.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk for sure. That's not an issue. I can talk. I could just plug a microphone in and record it for an hour and go, oh, here's a podcast. It wouldn't be good. It wouldn't be much worse than this, though.
No, it's true. Remember that one time we plugged it? Well, we didn't even plug it. We just brought out my phone and we recorded a podcast on the shore of the water at Walpole.
Yeah.
Anyway, I met the crocodile. He came and he stood next to me and kind of looked at me, and I was like, oh, the crocodile, I must avoid his jowls lest he wrestle me and break my neck.
But tell the important bit of the story, because I want to talk about this.
Yeah, well, the important bit of the story is that it sort of just happened organically that he walked up and was standing next to me, because the booth that I was showing at was right by the stairs leading up to the top part of the auditorium where all the lectures and talks were. And so I looked over and I realized it was him, and I held out my hand and I said, Mr. Cecil, how nice to meet you. And he said, oh, yes, hello. And he kind of did the little...
That's not the low rumbling noise that I
Well, no, he expected. Went... which translated to, oh, yes, hello, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
And he did that thing that you do at conferences where everyone is wearing a lanyard with their name tag on it, and he sort of did like the towards the crotch eye glance to see who he was talking to, because I guess he must have been off put by the fact that I addressed him by name and thought, who is this guy? Do I know him? So he looked at my name tag and I said, it's nice to finally meet you. You know, I feel like we're ships in the night. We've been at different conference. I mean, we've been at this conference, but at different times, and we've never had a chance to meet, but it's nice to meet you. And I introduced myself. I said, my name's Francisco. This is my game, Lamplight City, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh, brilliant. And then he was given a DVD set of the games published by Application Systems Heidelberg, including Lamplight City, so maybe he'll play them. But the best part of this conversation was, he said, you know, I've never met anyone named Francisco before. And I don't remember if I said, well, now you have. But he was like, I think I'm going to call you Francesco, you know, like the Italians. It's much easier to remember, or something along those lines. And then he walked away. And I was like, Charles Cecil, what the hell is wrong with you?
This is a guy, right? This is a guy that's been in the games industry for decades.
Mm-hmm.
He's undoubtedly been to GDC set in San Francisco.
He has been to GDC somehow, because I have seen him at GDC several times. I've passed him when he's been walking by in a big huff and hurry. And yeah, somehow
this old lizard can't remember the name Francisco or thinks it might be too difficult.
Well, I think we've solved an important mystery.
I wonder if he instead was trying to appear more cosmopolitan.
Maybe. But I think
share his knowledge of Italian things, even though that's a different name.
Yeah, no, I think we've just discovered the source of his embarrassment. I think that's why he's...
If you've played Revolution games past a certain point,
we invited him to be on this podcast once. I don't think we can ever get him on this podcast.
Why not?
Because we just talk shit about him.
That
poor
was
Charles
what I was
Cecil
planning to do when he came on. What were you planning to do?
I was planning on being respectful and conducting a nice interview.
Oh yeah, a bit of sycophancy. That's what we want on this podcast.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to be a sycophant. There's way too much sycophancy in the adventure game community already, believe me.
Is there?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, Yeah, so that was my Oh, I also had an experience with Ragnar Tornquist.
In a toilet.
Yes, it was raining on the
Leave it,
Saturday
no, leave
night.
it there. That's enough. That's all they need to
I want
let
to
me think of.
clarify because I want them
Let
to
that
get the
justify.
image. I was raining on Saturday night, and long story short, I got soaked walking around in the rain, and my pants were soaked through, but only on my right ass cheek. And so I was in the toilet, and I was trying to, in the stall, and I was trying to figure out how to best remedy this situation because I figured,
Take your pants off.
well,
That's my advice.
I thought about taking my pants off and taking up off my underwear and putting my pants back on and just going commando, but that wouldn't have worked because my pants were soaked through. My trousers, for you UK people, they were soaked through, so it wouldn't have made a difference if I had
But
done that.
also your pants were as well for the UK people.
Yes, that's right. So instead, what I did was I pulled a Mr. Bean and I went to the hand dryer and I started drying my ass on the hand dryer. And
Why not?
Ragnar Tornquist walked out of the stall. This was after I had left the stall and I left the bathroom. And I was trying to formulate my plan because there was people in the bathroom at the time, so I was like, I have to do this when the bathroom's empty. And it was a tiny little bathroom. So I went inside again and there was no one around, and so I started drying my pants and my ass. And Ragnar Tornquist came out of the stall and was looking at me. And I was like, oh no. So I said, haha, well, this is embarrassing, but my ass is wet. And he was like, well, we're all friends here, it's okay. And then he left, and I was like, oh dear. But then I told this story, and someone said to me that I should have said, well, I'm just being an ingenious adventure game player. It's not like I'm using a rubber ducky and a clamp to dry my pants.
You should have said, hey, this looks weird, but at least it's not the end of Dreamfall chapters. We can't get him on the show now, are we?
Nope.
We're very rapidly burning bridges that
We
never
really
existed
are.
anyway.
Yeah. So I played the new Leisure Suit Larry game. No, it's.
I should say I'm burning the bridges. You're being kind and just telling stories.
Anyway, let me tell an unpleasant story from Adventure X. So,
So here's what, hang on. Here's how you're promoting AdventureX, Conference for Adventure Game Fans and Developers Everywhere. You can go there and have Charles Cecil willingly misremember your name.
Yeah.
You can be caught in an awkward bathroom situation with Ragnar Tornquist. And now you can tell a story about some very prejudiced language.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to AdventureX, everybody.
You want me to tell you about the dream I had about Adventure X the other night
I
on this
don't.
podcast?
I don't. This is a PG-rated show, and I'd like to keep it that way.
It wasn't that kind of dream. Anyway, yeah, so on the Friday night there was a Writers Guild of Great Britain meetup, which was a satellite event because it was an independent from Adventure X event, but the organizer knew that there would be people in town for Adventure X, and so he encouraged people to go. And so I did, and it was nice. I got to catch up with a bunch of people that I knew. And I got to meet new people because the way it was set up was sort of like a speed dating thing where he encouraged people to not hang around and talk to the same people the whole night, but rather every 20 minutes or so the groups would switch around. And so there was this one guy there who I will not name, but let's just say he looked like Santa Claus on his off time. And he kind of gave me a
Maybe it
weird.
was Santa Claus on his off time.
I hope not, because Santa Claus is a weird creep, if that's the case. I mean, I
Well, yeah,
guess.
dude, he comes into
Yeah,
people's
I guess.
houses uninvited by anything other than tradition.
I guess Santa Claus is kind of a creep if you think about it. So anyway, I was talking to him. He actually came around to the groups I was in a few times. But long story short, I didn't get a very good vibe off of this guy, because he just seemed really kind of weird, and he was talking about Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. He referred to it by its original title, which, as you know, contains a racial slur. And he actually used the word. He did say, "Pardon the word," and then he said it, but I still thought it was kind of off-putting for him to say that amongst people that he had just met.
Hi, group of strangers. I'm going to say
I'm
a
gonna
word
say the
now that
N-word
is,
now. Yes.
yeah.
Anyway, So basically, I just got a weird vibe off of him, and I made an attempt to avoid him the rest of the conference. And it turns out, apparently, that he was getting a little too close and a little too grabby with the young ladies at both that event and at the conference. And so he has subsequently been banned from any future conferences. But, I mean, unfortunately, that sort of thing, you know, you hear about it happening, and then when it happens at your little conference, you know, it hits a little closer to home, but it just goes to show that sort of thing. It is always disappointing. But then, also, it came to light, well, it didn't really come to light to me because I already kind of knew, but it also was mentioned that, you know, certain other high-profile figures in the narrative games community also do not have such a great reputation, and I guess that kind of goes to what you were saying about never meet your heroes, because sometimes, and not never meet your heroes, but like, you know, you're reading Raymond Chandler, who you respect as an author, and then you find that he has this negative thing, and like maybe you admire this particular game developer or whatever, and you find out that they are not great, and it's kind of like, ugh, that's not good. But that's a whole can of worms about separating the art from the artist and all that stuff that I'd rather not get into. I just wanted to touch upon it and bring to light the fact that unfortunately this did happen at Adventure X. Not to sully the conference or anything. I mean, it's a great conference, and it's not their fault that this happened. It's good that they took steps to prevent it, or hopefully try and prevent it from happening again. But, you know, unfortunately, this sort of thing is out there. Anyway, you were going to say.
I was just going to say that I have a Happy Meal toy that someone gave me a year ago, and it's like a plush, like, dice with faces on it from the Emoji Movie. I don't know why that was thing. It was given to me. And I've just realized that it has two sides with the number 6 on. It's the worst dice imaginable. Is it? Anyway, so I feel like we've been a bit of a tabloid and just gossip so far.
Yeah.
We should talk about game stuff as well, because, you know.
Yeah.
I'm happy to make fun of Charles Cecil, but I want to... Oh, I mean, if there's any more bridges,
I played the new Leisure Suit Larry game.
I feel like we could talk about the games that have come out since we last done a podcast that we worked on.
Do we have to?
I mean, we don't have to.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just wanted to say that I did play the new Leisure Suit Larry game, and it wasn't terrible. It was actually pretty decent. I mean, it was better than Magna Cum Laude, which is, you know, saying a lot.
Yeah, but so is Charles Cecil's ability to remember your name. And that, my friend, is a low, low watermark.
Oh dear. But anyway, was fine it has a few cringy moments, but you know what Leisure Suit Larry game doesn't. But it's not like
I was really impressed with the graphics style.
Yeah, the graphics style is actually really good. And like I saw a lot of people complaining that it looked like a Flash game, but the animations were actually really nice. Like they were very smooth, and there was like some, you know, visual stuff.
I think saying looking like a Flash game is such an easy out if you want to criticize something that's high-res in 2D and don't want to actually have to try and figure out what it is you don't like.
Yeah.
Because Flash games look all over the place.
Yeah.
Anyone that's played Flash games know that. So, yeah. But yeah, I thought it looked really cool, and I hope to see more games by those people.
Yeah.
I was just thinking the other day, like, I feel like other than, like I was trying to think of stuff that I've played this year that was an adventure game. And I'm like, there haven't been as many as there were last year. Last year was jam-packed. And this year, I played Chichel, and
I don't know. I feel like there was a ton of adventure games this year. I feel like the market for indie adventure games has kind of gotten saturated at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that there's been a great deal of stuff. Maybe I've been out of touch.
I mean, you worked on one of the biggest received adventure games of the year.
Yeah, but I'm not
talking
about
stuff that
Well, one of the
biggest indie adventure games of the year, anyway.
I'm not talking about stuff that I work on. I'm talking about stuff that I can play. I guess Unforeseen Incidents was a pretty...
Yeah.
Big place. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, Unavowed came out, and that was cool. I remember it was interesting. because I was working on the Nighthawk Kickstarter pitch, like, at the time that Unaware was coming out. It was a lot on at once, and I was just like, this is really poor timing, but whatever, you know, we'll just do it.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, finishing the last piece of art for the Nighthawks Kickstarter pitch and sending that off to Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And then being like, oh, I got to run out for band practice. So I, like, ran out, went to band practice. Like, we were playing till, like, midnight. And then just, like, before I drove home from band practice, like, oh, yeah, Unavowed's out. I should check and see if it, you know, if people like it or hate it. And then I just, like, opened my phone up and, like, PC Game Review positive, Rock Paper Shotgun Review positive, and then I think Adventure Gamers Review positive. And I was like, oh, sweet. All right, that's that. And then I just, like, drove home and went to bed. I was like, I was very, very busy at that point. So I was like, it didn't really, like, sink in that, like, people were liking the game until much later, because I was just very busy, mm-hmm. you know? And I always feel like I finish a game 3 months before it's out. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm more disconnected than someone like you that's working on it until, like, the last couple weeks before release.
Mm-hmm.
So I always feel like this kind of big disconnect. Like, I'm already past pre-production and onto production on the next project usually. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of weird to me. And, like, I don't do a, you know, release party or anything like that. I just, yeah, it's done. Next thing. It's always interesting to me, you know, because, like, it means that I never have that lull when I'm like, oh, man, I need another project.
Did you just say lull out loud?
Thanks, Krusty the Clown. But yeah, so I remember that lull when I was doing my own stuff. And, like, you'd finish a project and put it out there, and suddenly you'd have no project to work on. You're like, oh, man, I want to work on something. I don't have that anymore.
Mm. Oh, well, what a problem to have.
People like working.
Oh, no.
But have you had that, or were you worn out enough on Lamplight City that you were just like, I'm happy to have a break now?
Well, yes and no, because, so, Lamplight City is an interesting thing to talk about, because it kind of burned me out towards the end, because, as you know, I didn't start editing the voiceover stuff. Like, we recorded the voiceover stuff in December and January of last December, this January.
Correct.
But correct. I didn't start actually sitting down and editing it together until about April, I want to say.
Mm.
And normally it wouldn't have been that big a deal, but I also did lip sync. And I thought the lip sync was going to take me a month and a half, naively. It took me 3. Mm. And the game had 8,000 something lines of dialogue, of which half of those were lip synced, so I had to lip sync about 4,000 something lines of dialogue. So originally I wanted to have the game out by July, and I was really, like, crunching, self-imposed crunching, just, like, trying to get everything together as quickly as possible. Like, I was figuring if I get 100 and something or 200 lines lip synced per day, I can get this done in X amount of time, blah blah blah. So I was, like, putting these goals and numbers on myself and feeling really bad when I wasn't able to do that. And, like, I was, you know, trying to get X number of lines per hour. Like, I was trying to get, like, 20 lines per hour lip synced, but it just felt, like, really slow and really tedious when I couldn't get that. So, yeah, I mean, I was working, like, 10, 12 hour days for weeks at a time. I wasn't eating dinner until, like, midnight. I wasn't doing anything aside from just sitting here in my apartment working. And so I was like, well, I mean, part of me wanted to get the game in as good condition as possible to get out, but also I was also dealing with the fact that, you know, Application Systems was very kind to, as part of our agreement, provide me with a monthly cost of living stipend, which I budgeted for 6 months, and I went over by 2 months. And so those last 2 months, I didn't get that income And so I was like, this game needs to be out and earning money as soon as possible, because I can't, I mean, I'm going to run out of money if I'm just, if I keep it any longer. So in June, we had a meeting, and we decided that July wasn't going to be realistic because I was going to have to kill myself basically doing this lip sync, and it was going to be right up until the very last minute. And then we also had to, luckily at that point, Dave had already announced the release date for Unavowed, so we didn't really have to like wonder, oh my God, are we going to be competing directly?
Like Clash, yeah.
Right. And I mean, we had the same PR person, so that helped, because she was very much like, you know, about working around both of us.
Sure, so, and we're all kind of in it together, like you want to...
Yeah, exactly, you know. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I, you know, so we decided to release in September, and it was right after Gamescom as well, because the whole thing is the press doesn't care about your game if it's out. They ignore your game completely if it's out already. So the idea was to get maybe a little last minute press push at Gamescom. So yeah, we decided to release in September. So I was still doing everything. I mean, I finished lip syncing everything a few weeks before release, thankfully, and we got everything tested and everything. And then I was like, okay, well, in these last few weeks, I just have to take care of any crazy like game breaking bugs that the testers report and stuff. But then as it happened, Mittens was like 2 days after Lamplight City released on September 13th and Mittens started on September 15th. So I had some friends staying here with me that were going to come along to Mittens. And so they got here the Sunday of the week of release. So I felt really bad because, like, I tried going, you know, I went out with them and took them around and we had fun. But at the same time, they had to, like, see me stressing out about releasing the game. So I felt kind of bad about that. But, yeah, so, like, the morning of, I called up Volker, my publisher, and he was like, all right, press the big green button, the release button. Oh, yeah, there was also the stress of, like, getting the game approved for release, because believe it or not, Steam actually does do some sort of quality control to make sure that your game actually runs. And we had some issues with the Mac and Linux builds not running or not downloading. So the first time we submitted for review to release, they came back with, yeah, the Mac and the Linux versions are not running. And also, you say that you have commentary as a special feature, but we couldn't find it. So I was like, oh, crap, I forgot to get rid of that. So I had to make those changes, and we finally got everything working. So I resubmitted for review. But then the thing is, on the Steamworks page, it shows you, it says, like, you know, the earliest you can release your game is this date. And they give you a 5-day window, because they say, okay, well, if you... It usually takes about 1 or 2 days for them to complete the initial review process, but then if you have to resubmit it, it might take up to 5 business days. So the game came out on the 13th. I submitted the week before, like on the 6th or so. And by the 7th, I had already gotten the answer, or the first response. So I resubmitted, and it was, at this point, I think it was like Tuesday, and the game was coming out Thursday, and still nothing. And at that point, every day, the date of the earliest you can possibly release your game would get later, one day later. So on Tuesday, of course, it's like, the earliest you can release your game is on September 16th. And I was like, ah, God, no! But then I realized that just means if you were to submit for review today, the earliest you could release is this date. It doesn't adjust for if you've already submitted. So thankfully, on Tuesday, I got the email from Steam saying, all right, you've been approved for release. And I was like, that was the biggest relief.
Weight off your chest.
Yeah, it was a huge... At that point, I was like, okay, nothing else is going to get me down. Like, I don't care at this point. Who cares? Whatever happens, like, this is it. So I called him up on the day, and he was like, press the button, and I pressed the button, and it was like, you do not have the authority to press this button, and I was like, no!
Who do you think you are, little man?
Yeah, exactly. So then he had to press the button, and then the game was out. Yeah. So yeah, but at that point, and of course, like, I didn't sleep on the night, on Wednesday night. I hardly got any sleep, because the embargo lifted at midnight, so I was, of course, looking at reviews. And the very first review that I saw was GameSpot, and they gave it like a 6 out of 10 and were like, eh. I was like, oh god, no! But thankfully, it got really good. I mean, it got some positive reception. It got some lukewarm reception from some of the bigger sites, like Adventure Gamers gave it 3 stars or something, which isn't terrible, but no. I was kind of surprised that they only gave it 3 stars, but whatever. And like, unfortunately, all of the sites that are on Metacritic, most of them gave it like, I think it only got like 16 reviews on Metacritic, 16 review sites, and of those, like 7 of them got yellow. But a 7 out of 10 is considered a yellow on Metacritic, and like 8 of them, you know, got greens, so it has a 72 on Metacritic, which is yellow. But I mean, people don't really. I don't know. Metacritic, I think people give a little bit too much. The only thing about Metacritic is that, like, it shows up on your Steam page. But Steam reviews show up first, so anyway.
Here's the thing with me, and you know how I feel about reviews. I look at reviews when they first come out, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Usually by the time a game's out, I know what I would have done differently anyway.
Right.
I know the stuff that I like and the stuff that I don't like. There's always that bit of panic. We're like, oh god, everyone's gonna hate this game, you know, it'll be messed up or whatever. But like, there's a point where you just, you know, you're just wearing a hair shirt to torture yourself when you're just reading every review and every comment and stuff. And like, I know people who do that and they're very successful, but for me, like, usually by then I've got another project and I'm trying to put the stuff that I couldn't do in the last project, whether it's through time or skill or, you know, I didn't realize that that was the thing I should be doing. I'm trying to do that for the next project. So I'm like, yeah, look, I know I messed that up. That's cool, you know. And I'm pretty lucky. Most reviews of people that can handle low-res graphics have been pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
Some people just can't flat out handle it. That's fine. That's, you know, I don't hold that against people. It's 2018. Like, you know, I get it.
Sure. And I mean, so, like, with Lamplight City, I knew that there was going to be people, like, the more hardcore adventure game fans, I knew that there was going to be people that were going to bounce off of it because it wasn't your traditional adventure. I mean, the whole no inventory thing and the whole, like, gameplay being based on talking to people and looking at stuff. I knew that people were going to be like, oh, this is... And yeah, some people were, but the good thing is that, you know, there were no, like... There were no, this game sucks, this game's terrible reviews like I've gotten in the past. Like,
right,
they're, you know, the ones that were, even the ones that were lukewarm, like, had a lot of nice things to say about it, but their main gripes usually was, oh well, there's not very much to do, or there's not that much interactivity, which I disagree with, but that's, you know, whatever.
So I mean obviously it's too early to like say anything about next projects or anything like that, but are you keen to pursue that path of like pushing to dialogue versus traditional, I guess, interaction?
No. I already have a clear idea of what I'm doing next. I had the pipeline ready to go like halfway through production of Lamplight City. I was like, I know what I'm gonna do next. But I mean, Lamplight City was an experiment as far as making a detective game of a certain style. I'm not necessarily interested in adapting that formula for every game I do. The next game already, I haven't like designed anything specific on paper, but it does lend itself to traditional adventure game puzzles and stuff. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to go back to that. I'm not going to just say, oh no, this is another Lamplight City, no inventory deal. But yeah, I mean, I'm pushing myself in other ways with this next project. Right. So, yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like you know, with Unavowed, Dave and I were trying to do like the party based thing, because Dave and I both love role playing games, and we've loved them forever, and we love like the BioWare thing where, you know, well, for me, I like the old BioWare thing where like you have these guys and like you choose who to take, and then the next time I play an old BioWare game, I'll take someone else and be like, oh, what funny things are they going to say? Hee hee, this is fun. So it was cool to try and bring that, and I feel like that was, you know, it was extra work to implement, but I feel like it was a fairly safe experiment to implement. Probably the biggest risk was having the protagonist be silent,
right?
Which is pretty unusual. You know, after I would say Rosa was less of a strong character than Joey, but that's what the sort of thing people looked to Dave's games for, was like a Rosa Blackwell that they could follow through this big journey.
Right.
And like see her grow, whereas Unavowed is more focused on the companions. But I feel like Blackwell, people like Joey the most anyway, and he's the companion, so, you know.
Right, and I mean, I think most people liked Eli the most in Unavowed, and he's basically, not Joey, but he's the most Joey-like.
It was funny when Dave was first describing Eli to me, and I'm like, I gotta draw this guy not looking like Joey. So I'm trying all these different designs, and Dave's like, no, that's not right. And then he's like, oh, no, that's not right. So I was like, ah, to hell with this. So I just drew Joey, basically, and I sent that to Dave, and he's like, yeah, that's it. I was like, yeah, oh, there we go.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, if you watch noir films, they all dress the same way. Sure. They all look the same. So, you know, I get it.
Yeah, of course. There's definitely a certain type that it's easy to default to. But the one thing I was going to say, where you and I differ a little bit, is your involvement in the projects is basically as artist, visual designer and everything. So, yeah, it's nice if the project is well received, but ultimately it doesn't necessarily, like, the stakes are not necessarily as high for you, really. I mean, I guess they, in a way, they kind of are, because, like, you know, if Unavowed comes out and it's not well received and it's then no one buys it, you know, then that kind of puts your job at risk. But like for me, if Lamplight City comes out, I'm depending on this game to fuel my income for the next, you know, certain amount of time until I can hopefully, like, my ability to make another game and be able to make another game as my full-time job depends on how Lamplight City does. So to me, it feels a little bit more stressful in the sense of, like, oh my god, if this game comes out and everybody says it sucks and nobody buys it, then that's it for me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before, on my side of things, my reviews are when the game is first officially announced, because people know if they like whether it looks or not, and they'll tell you straight away whether they like whether it looks. So I know pretty early on if I've done good or not.
Sure.
But
the good thing there is that you have plenty of time to change if people are not responding well to it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the projects I'm working on now are very different. And so, like, I'm kind of, like, stressed out. Well, Nighthawks was interesting because I had very little time to learn a particular style. And, you know, we're talking 4K resolution, which I'm so far away from 4K resolution. It's not funny. You know, I'm not even at 1K resolution until now. So you follow me on Twitter. You saw how many art studies I was doing getting ready for this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I worked my butt off getting ready for Nighthawks. And then I had, like, I want to say extremely little time to do it. Like, I would have easily preferred, like, another fortnight or something just to polish everything up, but I didn't get it. So I'm like, all right, let's, you know, the timing of everything was really stupid with, you know, I think it was submitted to Dave to check it out and everything right when Dave was going to GDC. So that was really not good because, you know, GDC is very distracting.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, and then I had to get the release done because we had a very small window for, like, getting the Kickstarter before the conferences, when everyone stops caring about your Kickstarter project and starts caring about everyone else's cool trailers and, you know, Unavowed releasing. There's just, the timing was awful, but, you know, we pulled it off. I wouldn't have been able to do it without, you know, help from Ivan. He took my character portraits, which are not my thing. I really am not very good at those. And he sort of made them look presentable, but sort of, you know, and it was a fair bit of, I want to say for a demo, like for a rolling thing, it was a fair bit of artwork to produce. But anyway, we got through that. So I was like, oh, cool. All right. People obviously like the 4K stuff that I can do. So that's one cool thing passed. And then the next one, well, we'll still see. I'm still working on that. I'm still refining that. So
what, the 3D?
Give it. Yeah,
I mean, it's no secret you're doing.
Yeah, but I don't want to. I don't like to talk about it until I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you've been posting some stuff about modeling that and texturing you've been doing. It looks pretty good.
It looks all right, but I'm still. It's interesting talking to people because, you know, people have different opinions, but I'm still like, there's something missing, and I know there's stuff missing. I got to figure it out. Mm-hmm. It's interesting though because in 2D, I can usually look at it and go, "Oh, that's what's wrong."
Right.
On a technical level, in 3D, I don't have that yet.
So yeah.
We'll see. But also, I know it's kind of, you know, I know that people are going to be disappointed that we're doing something so different. I'm not that naive to think that people aren't going to go, oh, I like the old stuff better. That's fine. I totally get that. You know, whatever. You know, I've done that many pixel art games that I'm like, I have nothing left to be like, oh, you know, I'll do another one for the people.
Right.
I've worked on like 40 of the damn things. So
yeah,
I'm fine. I'm totally okay with that. If people aren't happy with it, that's fine. Go play one of the other 40.
Yeah.
You know, knock yourself out. It's all good. yeah, I mean, like literally, I've painted over 1,000 backdrops for games.
Mm.
I got nothing that I'm like, oh, yeah, I didn't spend long enough in that style, you know. Right. And you know, that's not to say that I'll never work on another pixel art, well, I say pixel art, a low-resolution adventure game ever again, you know.
I wonder, you know, it's funny because...
Or that maybe there's another project that when I get time to, you know, kick back into production.
Actually, but, you saying low resolution brought up something else, another conversation I had recently, which I thought was interesting, and I kind of want to get your opinion on this.
Okay.
You know how you look at an RPG Maker game and you can tell, oh, that was made in RPG Maker. Because a lot of people usually just use the default look of an RPG Maker game, I guess, for lack of a better term. And, you know, sometimes if you look at a 2D adventure and it's made in Unity, like I've told you, oh, I can tell it's made in Unity because of a particular thing, like the zoom in and out thing from Unity. That's very much, And I've heard a lot of people say, and rightly so, that AGS games all look the same. Because, yeah, to an extent, I agree. Like, a lot of people use the Sierra template, maybe a slight different version of it, but usually, you know, you have like a verb or an icon bar at the top of the screen, maybe sometimes at the bottom of the screen. You have your low resolution pixel art backgrounds and characters. You have the character portraits and whatever. But I wonder what it is about AGS games. I mean, I was kind of wondering about what made AGS games look like AGS games. And so I was talking to somebody about this, and I also, as a side note, I always think it's funny how you and I both do the thing where we say, I was talking to somebody about this, like we don't name who it was. Anyway, we're not being coy, we're just being respectful. So I was talking to someone about this, and I, out of curiosity, sent them some screenshots from different games, and I sent them some screenshots from I forget what AGS games, but they were like, yeah, this looks like an AGS game. And then I send a screenshot from Paradigm, and they were like, oh, wow, no, this looks like a Hidden Object game. Because, you know, the backgrounds in Paradigm are kind of very detailed and very cluttered in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, that's interesting that you immediately thought Hidden Object game. I wonder if it's because of the resolution. And so I sent them a screenshot from The Journey of Ezer, and they were like, oh, wow, this looks like The Curse of Monkey Island. And I was like, yeah. This is an AGS game. And they're like, oh, this doesn't look like an AGS game. So I was like, okay, well, maybe that's what it is. Because most people, there are very few AGS games that have been released both commercially and freeware that have been higher than 640 by 400 or 640 by 360 or whatever. So I kind of wonder if that is one of the major things that people think, oh, this looks like an HES game because it is low resolution. And the other thing is like, where exactly do you draw the line between low resolution and high resolution at this point?
Low resolution for me is anything lower. Well, even 720p is low resolution now.
Okay.
If my monitor's set to 720p, I'm like, what the hell's wrong with my screen? Why is it so right?
I guess. I don't know. What do I have my monitor set to?
Yeah, but you've got like a $30 PC, man.
Hey, it's not that bad.
Not that good either.
It can run Mass Effect.
Oh, yeah, great. Mass Effect's from 2007. I was 9 years old in 2007.
You are not 9 years old in 2007. I might as well. You fucking idiot.
It can run Mass Effect. So can James Dearden's mother's laptop, and only one person listening will get that.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I probably can't run Techno Babylon 2, though, so there's a thing.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know what it
is. Here's the thing, man, is I want to say this. If you look at commercial AGS game releases, you know, you look at the stuff that we've worked on, like the other Wadjedi stuff, you look at stuff like Cathy Rain, the stuff like, you know, Samaritan Paradox.
Mm-hmm.
There is a consistent theme where a lot of the times the graphics are going for a semi-realistic look, like the characters look. So we're not looking at dropsy,
right?
You know, a lot of the times the resolutions are very similar. A lot of the times there's a crossover in, if not artists, but at least influences. So, you know, I remember Ivan posting in the, there was a sort of game where like you'd post a screenshot of a game and people had to guess what screenshot it was. And I remember, you know, everyone was doing adventure games, and I posted Tanita, which is a Russian plasticine adventure game, and of course Ivan got it. And for his screenshots, he posted four contemporary or contemporary-ish first-person shooter screenshots. Mm-hmm. They all look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. They look exactly the same thing. But I honestly, if I look at like, if I look at, you know, a Saints Row and a, you know, a Red Dead Redemption and a Grand Theft Auto and a what's the one you like? You know,
Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, and a Just Cause, and I look at them all together. I'm like, yeah, these are, you know, these are the same thing,
right?
Right. So if it's like listening to punk rock, if you're not into punk rock, you go, oh, this all sounds the same, right?
Right.
Whereas, like, if you're in there making punk rock every single day, and you're like a musician, you know that, like, oh no, because we use this chord that they'll never use. Well, that's a bit generous for punk rock. I've just burnt bridges with an entire genre of music.
Oh, well, let's keep the momentum going.
But, you know, excuse me. But yeah, like the Ramones, they're not going to use an F sharp. Don't be stupid. So, you know.
Wow.
So, you know.
What was that book you wrote, or that thing you wrote about the devil writing a book about the Velvet Underground?
Yeah. How to enjoy the Velvet Underground for people that like music.
Right.
It was a short story, not a book, but
right.
that was the title of his second book,
right?
The first one being the Holy Bible,
right?
But anyway, that's enough blasphemy. But yeah, so I think, like, I mean, if you look at our games from a distance, they look the same, right? You know, I mean, it's interesting that sort of Lamplight City and Unavowed, and then like you look at the stuff that Andal's doing now, we all sort of jump resolution the same amount at the same time,
right?
And so, you know, so,
and now you're going 4K/3D and I'm going 720p.
Yeah, so like, you know, until now there hasn't been, between our styles,
yeah,
that's the big thing. I mean, when I started making AGS games, you know this, I used to like look at your old screenshots and be like, oh man, how are you drawing?
That's funny, because I at one point was looking at your screenshots and thinking, oh man, how do I draw like that? So,
but it's the same thing when you like, you're playing guitar in a band with another guy, which is something I've experienced a fair bit, and like one night you hear him play something, you're like, how the hell does he do that? So you go home and you work it out,
right?
Right. That's how it works. And then, like, now I can play that thing that he plays. You draw from a common pool of knowledge. It's not, you know, the theory of calculus being developed simultaneously by two different guys in two different countries with no sort of communication. It's a shared experience of learning. We both played Monkey Island when we were younger. We both played Beneath a Steel Sky when we were younger. That's you get inspired by that stuff and you grow up thinking, I want to draw like Peter Chan. Why would you not want to?
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it's not weird that our games look the same.
No. I guess. It's just wondering what it is that makes them do that. And I guess we kind of discovered that.
Sure. You know, and like you and I, like if I look at a scene that you've drawn, I'm never going to mistake it for one of my own. Like, but even like if I forgot everything that I've drawn, but still remember how I draw, and then I compare our scenes, I know how I draw and how you draw. It's going to be different.
Right.
Of course. The way you move a brush is going to be different. The same with you looking at my work. You're never going to be like, oh, that's, you know.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop them from being overall similar.
Right. Yeah.
They basically look the same.
Mm-hmm.
I just use more color. You know, that's one of the ways that I try to make myself stand out and still try and do it is like, you know, Unavowed has a lot of bright reds in it because I know no one else out there is doing that. And I'm like, this is going to be my thing that like, that's one thing that like I wanted people to, when they see a Shardlight screenshot, they know exactly what game they're looking at. You know, I always felt that games that like Gemini Rue and Primordia really have that. They really own their aesthetic, and I really admired that. And I'm like, I want to give my games that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But now drawing in different styles or making graphics in different styles, I'm still trying to work out how to do that, and that's interesting.
Yeah. Ooh, excuse me.
I won't.
I'm clearly bored by this conversation.
That serves me right for answering a thing that you asked instead of talking about what I want to talk about.
Oh, what do you want to talk about?
Baldur's Gate.
Of course you do. Of course you fucking do.
It wouldn't be God.
You're just like all the adventure game fans who are like, oh, this is, let's talk about King's Quest for the 800 billionth time.
But it's interesting. I also want to say,
there we go, burning more bridges.
I also want to say this, right?
Yes.
Is that if you look at role-playing games, the sort that I like, which are like isometric-ish, and if you put a big pile of them together and you showed like ones from 1998 or like, you know, original Diablo and original Fallout and original Baldur's Gate, and even let's throw Jagged Alliance 2 in there, to stuff that's been coming out now, like, you know, Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire, you know, Wasteland 3 or whatever they're up to now. To that sort of stuff. And yeah, they're trying to recapture that aesthetic. But it's like, you look at it and you're like, yeah, these games all look the same.
I mean, I'm going to say something.
Except Torment Tides of the Monera, which is should look more like Planescape Torment, but doesn't. Anyway, go on.
I'm going to say something that might be considered controversial, but I don't care. I think basically every one of us has been making the same game essentially over and over and over and over again and just putting it in a different package, but it's basically the same game.
Well, how is that controversial?
It's, I don't know, people who are like, oh no, you shouldn't say that. No, that's
when you're
not true.
When you're a kid and you're listening to the Beatles or Elton John or Dire Straits and you're thinking, man, I want to play guitar like that.
Right.
That's the thing that you make when you grow up.
Mm.
You know, you can never truly escape it. Even like I listen to progressive rock, right, and stuff like that. And, you know, you listen to stuff like Pink Floyd that were doing stuff so totally different, but it's still rock and roll, man.
Yeah, sure. It's like, still the same structure.
Oh, you used a diminished chord. Whoa, yeah. You've changed the world. No, it's the same stuff.
Yeah.
You're still playing the Beatles, essentially, at the core of it, you know? Yeah. You grow up admiring a thing. You try and emulate a thing. None of us are that revolutionary. We're not that...
No,
imaginative.
I don't
to just
agree.
Come
I
up
don't,
with
no.
a whole new thing.
No, of course not. Of course not. I don't think I've innovated anything. I just made a game I wanted to play, basically.
I mean, isn't that what we do every single time we make a game?
That's what we hope to do every time we make a game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I wouldn't say it's controversial.
Okay.
We're making the same thing. It's the same with telling a joke. Everybody knows how a joke works, right?
Sure.
You've got a setup, and then you've got a subversion that comes unexpectedly, or a lot of the times expectedly, but it's not meant to be expected. And that subversion is what makes you go, "Oh, that's funny."
I have a joke, but I want to end the podcast on the joke. So let's get all the podcast ending stuff out of the way first.
Is the joke just our careers?
No. Although that is a pretty good joke.
_304.
I'm at Grunislav Games on Twitter, and together
we are
at BCT _ podcast. Thanks for listening. Wow, we've got it down. All right, so I need you to help me tell this joke. But you already know this joke because I saw you retweet it. But it's a kid's joke. It's a bad kid's joke, and I need you. I need you. You'll know what type of joke it is as soon as I say it.
Okay.
But I need you to just say the word "friend" when the time comes for the unit fart. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Knock knock. Oh wait, no! You have to start it. You have to start.
Yes. Knock knock.
Who's there?
A friend.
I don't have any.
Do you know what would have been interesting?
What's that?
Life presents a lot of possibilities, and I could have been dead an hour ago, and sometimes I wonder if that wouldn't have been for the better.
Bye.